think humor is a survival skill. It's a way of viewing the world. It's just as valuable in bad times as in good.
Welcome to The Art of Fatherhood, a podcast that takes you on the journey of fatherhood. Now here's your host, Art Eddy.
What's going on, everyone? Art Eddy here for another edition of the Art of Fatherhood show. And on the line, I'm very happy to have Adam Mansbach. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me, sir. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Good to be here.
So happy to chat with you. We're going to talk about fatherhood. Of course, we're going to do the Fatherhood Quick Five. But I think you inspired a lot of parents, or you felt all of our pain. And you wrote, of course, Go the F to Sleep book 10 years ago. So congratulations on that anniversary. But you also have a collector set we're going to talk about. But it's really great to have you on here, because I know that sometimes parenting is not all about sunshine and rainbows. We're frustrated and all that good stuff. So I'm speaking for a lot of dads and moms out there. We appreciate your work. Let's talk a little bit about some fun stuff. Let's talk about when you found out you were going to be a dad for the first time. What was going through your mind, sir?
Wow. I mean, that was 13 years ago at this point. I can't remember what was going through my mind. I was certainly very excited. I feel like for everybody, for me anyway, I don't want to speak for all parents. You know, I get in trouble when I try to do that. But I feel like for me anyway, and for a lot of people I know, the turning point, the decision to have a kid comes when you fall in love with somebody else's kid. You start spending a lot of time with somebody. In my case, my cousin, who I'm very close to, had his first son, and I was like spending all kinds of time with this kid and coming to the realization that I like this kid much more than I like most adults in my life, you know, found him like more interesting. So yeah, I was like 31, and of my three kids, you know, that was the only one that was like, you know, an intentional process. So, you know, I wasn't so much surprised as like happy and relieved, you know.
Yeah.
In retrospect, I feel like the best way to have a kid is by accident with somebody that you want to have a kid with. So I've been pursuing that ever since.
I know you're kind of joking inside, but a lot of people, when, you know, they're trying to have a kid and there's so much stress and all of these things, right? And it's just like, is it going to happen? Is it going to happen? Then you feel so much pressure, and it's like the act of making a kid is fun. So why are you trying to stress out about it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not fun. You're doing something wrong.
Exactly. Especially for you, very creative. You're a great writer. So of course, creativity and just expressing yourself, I think, are values that you're going to look to instill into them, right? Could you share with me some other values or, you know, morals you're looking to instill into them?
Well, I mean, you're right, certainly about the creativity. But I think to expand upon that, I want my kids to feel a certain kind of freedom in their ability to express themselves, in their courage to express themselves. I want to instill not just creativity, but like ideas about justice and fairness in the world. I feel like kids are born with a kind of instinctual notion of fairness. This is a core child belief, right? And it's often expressed interpersonally in the form of like, my sister got more ice cream than me, it's not fair. But I also think that it's actually a kind of a short step, not an easy step, but a short step to flip that and make it outward facing and take that sense of justice, injustice, fairness, unfairness, and like direct it toward the world, and to instill in a kid the idea that the same way that he or she feels when it's not fair is the way that the world feels when the world is not fair, and to be conscious and cognizant of that and move through the world with the desire and the goal of increasing justice, fairness for everybody. So I feel like you have to have those ideas in mind and be communicating them even from an extremely young age. So I try to do that. My younger kids are 4 and 2, and my older one has developed, I think, a good sense of social justice and activism and all of these things that I value and I grew up with. And, you know, I'm hoping that I can inculcate it in these younger ones as well.
I love the fact that, like, talking about, you know, one of your kids complaining that someone else got too much ice cream is a way you can kind of paint a picture like, hey, life isn't fair, but we can try and, you know, we'll rectify it here. Let's get out, like, the scale, make sure you get, you know, the certain amount of same ounces and all that of ice cream. But it is a good life lesson to, you know, share, because in that moment, kids will feel cheated, like, oh, it looks like they got like one more scoop and I didn't. But like, that's something they can grasp, because what they're feeling is like, hey, that goes around in the world. So if you want to, if you don't want to feel that way, make sure you don't have other people feel that way by your actions. So that's a, I mean, love it. It's just awesome, man. For you, obviously being a writer, you're very perceptive on things. You know, you pick up human, you know, behaviors and just attitudes. But for you, what is something that you have learned from your kids that they've either taught you about life or yourself in general that you'd like to share?
You know, I feel like I'm learning from my kids every day. Humor is another kind of core value of mine and something that's very important to me and to the household. And I feel like my sense of humor actually expands in relation to my kids. All of my kids have taught me something about the nature of a joke, the delivery and structure of a joke. I mean, these kids are consistently hilarious. Like, I don't, you know, I'm proudest of my kids when they say something funny, when they, that first time that your kid deliberately constructs a joke is not funny by accident, but funny on purpose. That's like an incredibly proud moment for me. So I have, you know, all of these memories of my kids just like, and of course, like they know how to, they know that this is what I'm like, you know, to know how they win my love. So, you know, like,
yeah,
they're going for it. But yeah, I feel like my kids have taught me a lot about humor. A lot also just about love, you know, like the, I mean, you know, while my 2-year-old's favorite thing to say to me for the last 3 months, I mean, this is both funny and heartbreaking, and I don't know what it's taught me. I feel like it's taught me something. Resilience, maybe. I'll be like, Asa, I love you. And she'll be like, no, you don't. And I'm like, yo, I'm speechless here. Like, I don't even know what to say to you.
It's because of that ice cream, man. You jilted her on ice cream. That's why. She knows what's up.
I'm just like, yo, that's a brilliant response in many ways.
I love that. And the fact that you said, you know, you want them to understand humor and use that in life. A few episodes ago, I had Anthony Alabi, who's on, who plays the dad on Family Reunion on Netflix. Mm. And he was saying he wants his kids to value humor, to understand it and embrace it, because you can see something, you can kind of flip it up, you know, upside down and see the humor of it, whether it's good, bad, or whatever. But he wants them, because he's like, no matter their profession, he just wants them to be, you know, embrace enthusiasm and also humor, because he thinks that's a sign of good intelligence. And I think just kind of like you said too, where like you see them put things together in a way that can make people laugh, and you can get how to motivate other people through laughter. So I just, that's the second time someone has said that. And I totally agree, because you can kind of, you know, bring a bunch of people in together by making someone smile or laugh or whatever the case may be. But also you get life too, because you see how things work, and it's a sign of intelligence. So I love that, man.
Yeah, no, I think humor is a survival skill. It's a way of viewing the world. It's just as valuable in bad times as in good. You know, yeah, no, absolutely.
What is one big piece of advice you'd offer to new dads listening to this?
I mean, very much on a related tip is you have to maintain your sense of humor. Like, throughout all of the trials, tribulations, absurdities, when your kid like does something disgusting, if you cannot maintain on some, not that you can't be frustrated, you will be frustrated. You will be filled with murderous rage at times. But you gotta preserve that little part of you that even through the murderous rage is still like, objectively speaking, this is some funny shit going on right now.
Yeah.
I think that's it, you know? And you know, I think what Go the Fuck to Sleep did when it first dropped was kind of give people permission to admit to the frustration, but also to laugh about it together, right? You can either kind of like cry alone or laugh together. That's really parenthood in a nutshell in a lot of ways. The other piece of advice I would give, again, on a very related tip, would be don't isolate yourself from the community of parents out there. I think this is true of relationships. I think it's true of parenthood. I think it's true of almost everything, is that we paint ourselves into a corner when we don't have enough information to understand that what we're going through, we are not going through alone, that other people out there are also experiencing it, right? So many people like cannot be objective about how parenthood is going or how they feel because they're afraid to express it or afraid to talk to somebody else about it. 9 times out of 10, you're going to find out that what you're going through is fairly normal. And if it's not, even better. Like, nah, man, your relationship sounds terrible. That's actually not normal. Like, you should, you know, you should go to therapy or possibly end it. Yeah. I wish I did, you know, if I'd been more open about my relationships in the past and been like soliciting that advice and that feedback and that comparison, you know, I would have stayed in some bad stuff less long than I did. You know what I mean?
No doubt. Yeah. And again, I really appreciate that. Cause again, like a lot of great advice right there, you know, for new dads, take that to heart. And like you said, like your, you know, your book series definitely makes things relatable. That's one of the reasons why I started this podcast, is for other dads. There are things that I haven't experienced as a dad, but I'll bring on other dads who have experienced something, and my, you know, my audience will either, you know, email me or share something like, hey, I'm not alone. Thank you. And once you feel like you're not alone, as much as, you know, especially guys like, oh, we're a rock, we can be an island and all that stuff. We can joke, we can put that self, we, you know, we can say that to a certain amount, but after a while you want to feel like you have a village, right? So spot on that, man. And again, congrats on the Go to F to Sleep box set. I mean, I love the fact that you had, of course, Samuel Jackson, perfect for that. Bryan Cranston, Larry David. You've had some great, you know, fan reaction. I feel like people who complain about that don't get this book series. And I bet you've experienced a lot of surreal moments, especially having the, like the three guys I mentioned narrate the books. But for you, besides that, is there something that you were just like, that came from the series? You're like, how did this happen?
Oh yeah. Like so many things. I mean, they almost just kind of fall into different categories. Like,
okay.
There's the category where like I'm minding my business and suddenly my phone starts blowing up and people are like, yo, Cardi B is reading your book on the Tonight Show. And you're like, what? You know, like, I did not know that was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, or like, hey, I just saw a video of Jennifer Garner reading Go to Sleep. And you're like, where? I didn't know that was happening either. You know, there's these unexpected like celebrity readings and other readings that, you know, come out of left field that have not been orchestrated by me or my publisher. We're just lucky that the book is sort of in the zeitgeist enough, out there enough, that it is a touchstone for people. And this thing kind of keeps happening. So there are those kind of like amazing, pleasant surprises. Then there are just like the weird, surreal reactions, you know, like the fact that there was a group in New Zealand that wanted to ban the book and the like fight we had with them, which was very bizarre. It was like, cause they were like some Christian group, I think. And they were like, their press release said something like, while this book may be safe and even humorous in the hands of normal, well-adjusted adults, and you're like, okay, so far so good here. They're like,
you're waiting for that, but right? Yeah,
like, okay, with you so far, thank you. And then it's like, but in the hands of aggressive, dysfunctional parents, it could pose a real danger to children. And we're all just scratching our heads, like, what, like. In the hands of aggressive, dysfunctional parents, like a spoon is dangerous. You know what I mean? Like, this is why we're banning books now. But what ended up happening in that case is that the woman who read the audiobook for New Zealand and Australia, this wonderful actress named Noni Hazelhurst, who's like, you know, we've never heard of her here, but she is a big deal down there. She's both a serious dramatic film actress and like a children's television presenter. So she's like Meryl Streep and LeVar Burton wrapped
together. Yeah.
Also shout out to LeVar Burton, who also unexpectedly read Go to Sleep. Noni Hazelhurst basically went on TV and confronted like the president of Family First New Zealand and was like, shut the fuck. And he basically did. And that was the end of the ban. Like, you know, so that was pretty funny. Yeah. Just a lot of moments, man.
Do you ever think like one day, like, you know what, I wonder if I'm ever going to spark a fight with New Zealand.
Right. I got into like a fight on Twitter with Rafi one time, you know.
Oh,
I
was really?
Like, yeah. I was doing some interview on Canadian national radio. I think when the first sequel to the book, You Have to Effing Eat, came out. And like Rafi, like, you know, caught feelings about it and like accused me of like coarsening everyone's childhood or something. And I was like, fam, you do know this book is for adults, right, Rafi? Like, And we get, and then like my people were like beefing with Rafi's people, and I was like, am I really having this fight with Rafi right now on Twitter? Like, what's going on here? You know, that was weird.
For me, you know, my family are muses for, you know, my writings here at Art of Fatherhood, and of course, like certain things I think about for this podcast. But for you, your oldest, Vivian, she was the inspiration for this book. She's older now. What does she think of the book and its impact through, you know, not just pop culture, but just in the parenting world?
Yeah. I mean, tracking Vivian's relationship to the book has been really interesting. You know, she was too young to really understand what was happening at the time. Like, she was like, I wrote it when she was 2.5. It came out when she was like 3.5. She knew that it was a big deal because I was gone a lot. I was traveling all the time. She understood that the book was the reason. You know, she understood that this was different than like when my novel came out the year before that or whatever, you know, yeah. Not the same level of impact. She also is in several of the illustrations, right? Vivian leads a weird life because, I don't know, to me, I look at her life and I'm like, yo, you don't even understand like all this stuff going on around here. Like, you know, she just has so much access to like some of the artists that she actually admires the most, like, you know, some of the musicians and actors and writers that like she really connects with, reads and listens to, like they'll be at the house, they'll be hanging out, she can talk to them, she can be like, I loved your book, you know.
Yeah.
And that's just normal for her. Like, you know, Uncle Blake comes through town and he's a graffiti writer and he like makes a 20-foot mural of her name, you know, like she's on the first page of a book that sells a few million copies and like just normal to her.
Just a normal Wednesday, right?
yeah. She, you know, she starts rapping and we start recording music together and I send it to my friends and like they think it's cool. And next thing she knows, like it's in the hands of, you know, actual rappers that she grew up listening to. And like Drez from Black Sheep is telling her that she's dope on the mic. And like, you know, people are sending her beats and then like we end up talking about it on This American Life. And, you know, it's like all this to me, I'm like, yo, my mind is blown. Are you kidding me? Do you know how crazy this is that we get to do this? And she's like, what's for dinner? So, you know, it's wild, man. It's a wild situation. Like, I remember the first time I was doing a story about Go to Sleep for the Moth Radio Hour. Like they do these live shows where storytellers get up and tell the story. And I was telling basically the story of like my run-in with Dr. Richard Ferber, the author of the Ferber Method, around the time that Go to Sleep came out. And it's kind of a wacky story. Like he and I do a fundraiser together and he like, you know, whatever, we have a weird encounter and he kind of like throws me under the sleep training bus. And I'm like, what's happened? And then like, it turns out I went to camp with his son and me and his son once got thrown out of a Tower Records together because I ripped the head out of off of a cardboard cut out of MC Hammer. But like, then it's a whole weird story. But my point is like, Viv came and watched me do this show in front of, you know, a theater full of people, like 500 people or something. And I happened to be the last speaker before intermission. So I did my thing. I came off stage and as the show was ending, she like got out of her seat and ran down the aisle and like jumped in my arms just as I was walking off the stage. So like everybody saw her and understood she was my daughter. And like there was a reception after the show and she was probably like 5 at the time. And all these people suddenly like wanted to talk to her. And I sort of watched her process in real time what this kind of like fame felt like. And it was fascinating to watch because she was like, okay, I don't know these people, but they know me. And they kind of like, they want something from me. They're talking to me in a familiar kind of way. Some of them are cool. Some of their energy is a little weird. I don't really know how to react to this. But she was in that space for like 5 minutes. And by minute 6, she was like, yo, I love this. Who's next? You know, who wants an autograph? You know? And I like, I'm watching this. I'm like, oh my God. She's going to be a monster.
That's awesome, man. One more question for the Father Quick Five. Again, we're talking about the box set and all that good stuff. Like, do you have any future plans of another line of books from this series? Like maybe in the future, like not now, I know, but because I have two daughters, 13, 11, I'm not even thinking about being a grandparent, but like when you become a grandparent, are you going to be kind of doing a similar series like this?
Well, never say never. I mean, it's funny, man. Like I always think that I'm done. Like I wrote Go to Sleep and people were like, oh, you're going to do a sequel, you're going to do a sequel. I was like, nah, I don't want to cheapen it. I don't want to like do something that's corny that seems like I'm just trying to capitalize. So I waited a while. And the first sequel was You Have to Effing Eat. And, you know, it's like the other existential crisis, right? If you can't get your kid to sleep or eat, it's grueling. These yep. are like basic life necessities and basic sources of joy for most of us. So I ended up writing that and I felt good about it. Like it was authentic to me and my experiences with my kid and stuff. And then I chilled for like a long time. And then I ended up having two more kids. So the third book is called Now There Are Two of You, which in my case is an understatement because I actually have, you know, three daughters, like a farmer in a joke. So, you know, at this point, I don't think so. But hey, you know, never say never. I mean, I'm sure there is a world of grandparenting to come, hopefully. So maybe yeah. I'll have some new complaints. The books just kind of continue to have a life of their own, and new weird stuff is always kind of percolating. Like if you had told me 10 years ago that I would be doing a line of cannabis products for Go to Sleep, I would have been like, what? But you know, that's dropping probably in the next month. The first, you know, turns out people buy a lot of cannabis products to help them sleep. So it's kind of a natural, natural branding. So we're about to roll some of that out.
I love it. And again, it looks like things, you know, you want them to come organically. You don't want them to be forced. It's not like, all right, slap it up, box it up, we'll make a sequel, right? You want something to have some passion. Because again, like sleeping, yeah, like, oh, why can't they just sleep? And then the eating thing, like my youngest, we're always like, we need a sign that just says eat at the dinner table. Because like one of my wife's hands, like, oh, she eats like the French people. It takes forever. I'm like, yeah, but I can't have that. I can't. Cheerios and a banana shouldn't take 3 hours. What are we doing here, right?
So. The French don't have to go to bed at 8:30. Let's go.
Thank you very much for that, Adam. We're going to finish off with the Fatherhood Quick Five. Favorite family movie? And I know there's a little bit age disparity, but is there a favorite family movie right now?
Well, my youngest two have not yet seen a movie. We're on some very, I kind of don't start giving them screen time until they're about six. That's been my policy so far. Nice. With the exception of airplanes. On an airplane, anything goes. You can do methamphetamine and be quiet. But I'm going to say the first movie that my oldest Viv saw, and probably the movie that my youngest will see first too, and one of my favorites is the Muppet movie.
Nice.
Big Muppet fan. And my kids actually, you know, I'm a DJ. I collect vinyl. There's a whole wall of records behind me. So my kids are very analog. They listen to a lot of records. And although the two younger ones have not seen the Muppet movie yet, they actually listen to Muppet records, which are hilarious. Like it gave me a whole new appreciation. Like the writing, the jokes, hilarious. Fozzie Bear, top 10 comedian of all time. Come on.
Raising them right. I love it on the classics. Favorite family song, or is there an artist, you know, especially being a DJ, is there an artist you couldn't wait to introduce maybe your oldest to, or, you know, you're waiting to show, you know, showcase to your younger kids when they get up? Yeah,
we certainly listen to a lot of music. I mean, when Viv was young, I was very careful because I'd seen other people make certain mistakes. And it's like any song you play a three-year-old might end up being her favorite song that she makes you play 20 times a day. So I kept it strictly like to songs that I would be okay listening to 20 times a day. So she grew up on a lot of just music that I love, from hip hop to funk to reggae. You know, right now my four-year-old's favorite artist is Junior Cat, Super Cat's younger brother, Junior Cat, who's a reggae dancehall artist. She just wants to listen to Junior Cat 45s all day. And I'm good with that. I'm like, let's go.
Yeah.
So at this particular moment, it's Junior Cat in this household. He's nice. Winning. Yeah.
Love it.
Describe I might be the only person who can say that right now.
I think so. I believe so, man. Love it. Describe the perfect family vacation. Where would it be?
I'm going to first answer who would be there. And the answer would be a nanny, someone involved in the childcare profession. Failing that, several grandparents. One of the things I've realized over the years is like a vacation actually isn't a vacation if you have no childcare. It's actually much more grueling than just being home. So, you know, I'm a surf and sun type of dude. I'm trying to be in the ocean. So basically just put me on an island with, you know, some adequate childcare and I'm good.
Nice. Favorite kid's book when you were a kid? Did you have one?
I have a book. I mean, it's funny. Like, I have very strong memories. Books made an indelible, you know, I'm a writer. So, of course, a lot of books that made an indelible impression on me are books that I read probably when I was like 10, 11. I have favorites from before then, but there's a certain kind of strain of like young adult book that I read at that age that really informed my thinking. Two that come to mind are The Pushcart War by Gene Merrill, which is an incredible book, an all-time classic. Years later, I ended up adapting it for the screen, although unfortunately it never saw the light of day. But The Pushcart War is an amazing book. It's told as a history of a small-scale war in New York City between the pushcart peddlers and the truckers. And it's presented as like this history of the war because it's such a small war that it's understandable. Unlike most wars that take place in, you know, over continents and stuff like that. And the idea is like, if we can understand this war, we can avoid future wars. So with each printing, they move up the date so that it's always slightly in the future. But the pushcart peddlers are kind of this like old world coalition of like New Yorkers, and the truckers are kind of representative of like big capitalism. And it's really smart. It's like the way the media is deployed in service of, you know, it's brilliant. Yeah. So the pushcart war is one. The other one that I always think of is called The Moves Make the Man, which is by a dude named Bruce Brooks, also like a young adult book. It's about a kid in North Carolina in like 1954, I think, who is, he's a black kid and he's integrating the previously all white junior high in his town. Right after Brown versus the Board of Education, they changed the districting by like two blocks. So his house suddenly is part of this school district that he was previously not part of. And he's a basketball player and he's a super smart kid. He narrates the book in first person and he's navigating this new place with just a lot of wit and insight. And he becomes friends with this white kid who's a shortstop. And there's this kind of cross-racial, cross-sport friendship that develops. And the kid is dealing with a whole bunch of stuff. His mother is like mentally ill and in an insane asylum, and he wants to see her. And it's a really, really smart book I reread every few years because it's that good.
Kind of sounds like a lot of people need to read read this book, right? Especially what's going on in the world right now. So
highly, yeah.
Nice. And lastly, top three words you hope your kids would use to describe you as a dad, what would they be?
Whoo. Wow. I guess I want my kids to think I'm cool. Yeah. I'll admit that. I can admit that.
Yep.
And they'd be crazy to think otherwise. Let's just, you know, get that out. I mean, come on. I also want them to think that I'm funny. And I think the third word would just be loving. You know, I want my kids to never doubt or question that they got unconditional love coming from me.
Great three traits right there in words. Appreciate that. People, make sure you follow Adam on Twitter at Adam Mansbach, and also go to his website, adammansbach.com. Pick up the box set. Like I said earlier, you ain't anybody until you have a box set. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me. It's been an honor. Like I said, it's being in this parenting space. I know you've reached and you just touched a lot of parents just laughing, because again, there's going to be pain and, you know, all sets of different sets of pains and just things you have to climb as a parent, but your books just kind of make things a little bit easier and like we can laugh at ourselves. And I think that's what we need more than ever, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having me, man. This was a pleasure.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and go to artoffatherhood.net.